You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. A brief program note coming up on Monday. Neil Conan will be here with a discussion on where we should draw the line between political activism and domestic terrorism. Several members of a radical environmental group face sentencing as terrorists. Their supporters argue nobody got hurt. The government disagrees. Terrorism defined, that's Monday on Talk of the Nation. This hour, we're going to be turning to a different approach to reducing carbon emissions, going to a hydrogen economy. And when hydrogen is used in fuel cells or burned in a car, no greenhouse gases are emitted. But one of the stumbling blocks for using them in cars is the problem of getting the hydrogen to your filling station, storing it there, then pumping it into your car. We don't have an infrastructure to do that. And people are not keen to the idea of driving around with a big tank of compressed hydrogen, despite gasoline being much more dangerous and explosive, but that's another story. But what if you could fill your car instead with a tank of water and make the hydrogen from the water right there in the car when you need it? Scientists at Purdue University say they have come up with a method to do that, metal pellets, which when dropped into water, release hydrogen. Joining me now is Jerry Woodall. He's Distinguished Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering and Director of the Burton D. Morgan Center for Entrepreneurship at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. He joins us from the studios of WBAA there. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. Is it as simple as what I described?
Just about that.
How do you get that to work? It seems like alchemy.
Well, it's actually very simple high school chemistry. You know that we can use aluminum for lots of things. We can put it in water and make boats out of it and cook with it. The reason you can do that is aluminum in its natural state has a thin native oxide on it that will prevent the water from getting to the core of it, and so the aluminum stays stable. So the oxide is the key to passivating aluminum. If that oxide were not there, it would split water readily. And what I've done is just merely added another element, in this case gallium, from the group 3 part of the periodic table. And when you put that together with aluminum, the gallium acts as to prevent the oxide from forming or passivating the surface, so water will freely react to it with it. The gallium itself is inert. The gallium itself cannot split water, although it can oxidize in air, so it's a good combination. So we can recover the gallium easily. The aluminum oxide, which is a product, can be easily recycled back to aluminum by commercial processes that are out there. We use them all the time to make new supplies of aluminum from bauxite. So as far as I can tell, there are no showstoppers for this puppy.
So, you know, I'm going to give you the question that that I've been asked many times before to ask a scientist when they say that is, if you're so smart, why ain't you rich?
Ah. Now, that is a good question.
There's got to be a describe. There's got to be a showstopper.
Give me time. I'm only 68 years old, so I've got another 40 years to go.
And you have a great track record. You've invented so many devices. You're not just a hydrogen guy. You invented the semiconductor lasers that are in our CD players. You've invented transistors, components in solar cells. So people listen when you talk about something new, and I'm certainly interested to find out why. You know, you're at Purdue. This is something new. Why hasn't anybody thought about this? And there's got to be a downside to it, or else somebody would have done it, right?
You're right. You and I believe the same thing. There's nothing new under the sun. So let me tell you why this happened. When you think about it, people have thought about aluminum being a very energetic material in the past. So you can make aluminum powder. You can add concentrated sodium hydroxide. There are all that kinds of things you can do to make aluminum generate hydrogen. It's just they were not thought to be commercially or practically viable. This came about in a discovery of my IBM lab back in 1967 when I was working on one of these compound semiconductor projects that you were talking about. And I discovered that if I had a little liquid of gallium and aluminum together and add water to it, boom, I got hydrogen, heat, and aluminum oxide forming. It scared the hell out of me, so I went back to my office and spent a couple hours figuring out, and I finally figured, yes, the aluminum atoms at the surface of the liquid metal see water, They stripped the, they pulled the water apart and formed aluminum oxide. So in retrospect, it became very obvious that this would happen. But you ask yourself the question, who in their right mind is going to go around playing around with gallium and aluminum solutions when it's known that if I put gallium in aluminum, it makes the mechanical properties weak? And the main use for aluminum at the time was its mechanical properties and not the chemical properties.
Mm-hmm. So how far are we from making this practical?
Depends on what you mean by practical. I think there are niche markets open to us to use it in a small scale. As you pointed out, the infrastructure is the big issue. I don't think there's any technical barriers. What has to happen is that both politics and the marketplace have to play a role here to move this thing along. I mean, there are no aluminum filling stations, just like there are only a very few, practically zero number of hydrogen filling stations. They're there to show people that you can actually use hydrogen. BMW, of course, has liquid hydrogen in their tanks to run that really fancy 750H, I guess they call it, around Munich, and that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Although I'm not wild about liquid nitrogen in the back of my car, just as though I wouldn't want a compressed hydrogen in the back of the car. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, this thing is going to be available, to answer your question specifically, in small applications like we're considering making standby power units for medically fragile patients in the state of Indiana right now. And our business model is like that of Walmart. You start a little store in Arkansas, and you let it grow, and before Sears and Roebuck and Penny can do anything about it, you have Walmart's national, the biggest company in the mm-hmm. world, practically. I don't think we'll get there with this that way, but it's a start.
But you can actually say, just add water, and you've
right.
got what
just
you
add water.
Just add water, and out comes the hydrogen.
Tap water to boot. It doesn't have to be very pure aluminum. It doesn't have to be pure gallium. So you get rid of the cost issues that way.
Now, what about recycling the product that you have left over once you've used up all of the hydrogen that's coming out? Do you have stuff you have to get rid of?
Okay, so at the end of the day or the process, you have hydrogen that you've used. Mm-hmm. You have aluminum oxide, Al2O3, it is chemically. That you send back to the recycling plant. And they pass electric current through this, and it takes it back to the elemental form of aluminum. That process is currently has an efficiency of 50%, which is pretty good. The Alcoa folks think it'll get to 75% in a number of years. Mm-hmm. And so then I have to recover the gallium. But remember, the gallium is a liquid. It's inert, and it doesn't get involved in the reaction except as a sort of like a catalyst to prevent the aluminum oxide from passivating the fuel.
There's the rub. If you have to use electricity to recover it, don't you now again have to generate electricity in the process?
Okay, well, tell me. Yeah, but how do I regenerate dinosaurs? I don't know of a dinosaur farm around right now, so you tell me. I mean, look, we can't violate the laws of thermodynamics. Right. So you have to put more energy back in than you get out. But so what? I'll use solar farms in the long haul. I can use wind turbines. And so economically speaking, if I co-locate an aluminum recycling plant next to a nuclear power plant, I can recycle the aluminum oxide back to aluminum for 2 cents a kilowatt hour, and those are published numbers. Mm-hmm. So that makes the cost equivalent for the same amount of energy of aluminum about the same as gasoline.
So you could do the same thing with a wind powered plant. You could just bring the aluminum
absolutely
to the or so
over to Iceland and let her rip.
We just did another segment with another scientist. Maybe you were listening who had his own idea.
I was a little bit of it. Yeah.
You know, these things sound so good. They sound, you know. Have you broached the government with this idea? Maybe get some research money for it, do you not need it anymore? Why not private industry? Go Alcoa or somebody like that.
So that's really a good question. The answer is I've done that. With all modesty, when you make a revolutionary breakthrough, it takes some time for the people around you who are interested in this thing to accept it. So at this point in time, my colleagues at DOE are still pondering this thing over. I hope they'll be able to get some funding from them someday. But I also want to, at my age, I would like to commercialize this and get it out there. I mean, it's not about money. I think my grandchildren are actually going to be driving cars with this stuff in it. Mm-hmm. And I predict that.
So why not get the car companies involved in investing in this?
Well, we will at some point in time. Remember, my role is to develop the fuel. So we have there's a whole bunch of systems issues that need to be engineered that I need to put teams together to do this. But this stage of the project, I've found something that's reproducible. It's real. If you come visit me in my laboratory, if you'd like, sometime I'll give you a demo. I mean, it's not something that you have to wait 3 or 4 days and the wind is right for it to work. It actually works every time.
Let's go to the phones. Chris in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Yes, hi, thank you. I applaud the science and the progress that's going on here with technology, but I think the discussion needs to address limits and that we need to be limiting our emissions. Fundamentally, we need to stop developing technological excuses for so much auto and jet and other kinds of use that pollutes the environment so profoundly. And I guess what I want to contribute to this is that, you know, we need to remember that more cars on the road means more production of cars, which means more mining, which means more energy consumption and fossil fuel use for all the machines that are required to mine the metals and produce the rubber tires and all the things that go into, whether it's jets, cars, ships. You know, I'm not saying we're going to get rid of these things, obviously, but I think that, you know, the political solutions are critical in this, and we need to be talking about, you know, not just having some nice technological fixes. You know, and again, I applaud the science on
all
this.
Right, let me get a
really trying to limit the consumption of these fossil fuels and all the machinery that goes into that.
Jerry?
Yeah. Well, if this works out, there's plenty of aluminum on the planet. There's plenty of water. I mean, you know, 3/4 of the planet is water, so this will work with salt water. So our emissions are just water vapor out of the exhaust pipe. In fact, I have a picture of me over at Herrick Labs with my nose on the exhaust pipe of an internal combustion engine. I'm still alive. So I claim that if we move to an aluminum economy and we use solar and other forms that don't heat up the planet, I'm not so much worried about greenhouse. I'm more worried about the planet getting too hot. Mm-hmm. And so that's a longer haul thing, but we have to worry about it. So if we do if we make everything with hydrogen fuel, we don't add any more greenhouse gases to the planet, and we don't add any extra heat to the planet.
I'm talking with Jerry Woodall this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. So, Jerry, you're basically saying if we move to a hydrogen aluminum economy, we can make the hydrogen we need to from water. We can then recycle the aluminum and use solar or wind energy as the electrical source, so we don't have to worry about pollution stemming from new production of hydrogen using fossil fuels. And,
right.
And it would we can make enough of this to have a real impact.
I think so.
You think so. You know, things move slowly in this country. Our other countries, you know, in Europe, they think a lot greener than they do over here. Any interest over there?
I was in Singapore when the press release was released, and instead of seeing that it's not a big country, but mm-hmm. I have spent my evenings answering emails. I've got about 150 of these things from all over the world. I was really shocked about that. Mm-hmm. So this thing is getting pretty good coverage. So we'll see what happens as a result of this.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a team working on this? Are you assembling?
I have two students, a research scientist. I have a CEO that shows up at our meetings every week, and I have a few other consultants, informal consultants at Purdue that work with me on this. So we're kind of, you know, building this up from scratch, and hopefully more people will get interested in working with me on this.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can get another call in from David now. San Jose. Hi, David. Quickly.
Hi. Yes, I guess I'm just wondering how efficient is this process? How much hydrogen do you produce, and how much aluminum do you use? Is it, like, stoichiometrically exact, like you have to use quite a bit of aluminum to make the hydrogen? Just a second question back to what Ira said about, you know, it takes energy to make the aluminum. So how much does it actually take to make the aluminum originally versus also recycling it? Mm. So is there a net? You can't buy throwing axes. How efficient is the process in terms of energy used overall?
Okay, I can answer that question. It turns out that 2 atoms of aluminum make 3 atoms of hydrogen gas. 100% efficient that way. So the only expenditure of energy energy is to bring the aluminum oxide back to aluminum. And as I said earlier, that process is currently 50%. So when you consider fossil fuels and solar efficiencies of growing plants, which is about 10 to the minus 4, I think 50% is a lot better than 10 to the minus 4 in growing plants. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have lots of land area. I won't argue that point. But still, this is one of the more efficient ways of making hydrogen because the return process back to the aluminum is very efficient.
Do we have to mine a lot more aluminum if we go to an aluminum economy? And is that going to add to the energy burden?
Okay, that is a really good question. It turns out that the world has about a factor of 2 surplus capacity now. In other words, by the time you finish making your Coke cans and other things you want to make with aluminum, there's about 50% overcapacity there. And if we were to use that, we could drive about, we could run about half the cars in the U.S. on that. Mm-hmm. So if you go worldwide and you want to really get rid of all fossil fuels for mobile energy applications, so yeah, we'll have to mine more, but there's plenty there to mine.
Mm-hmm. And it won't upset the environment with all the energy it takes to mine it.
Nope.
No. All right, Jerry, good luck. Thank you, Dr. Woodall, for taking time to talk with us.
And, well, thanks for having me on the show.
And we're always looking for new ideas and shining some light in those dark areas that never get any light for inventors and entrepreneurs like you. Thank you for taking time to be with us. Jerry Woodall is Distinguished Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering and Director of the Burton D. Morgan Center for Entrepreneurship at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. This program is produced by Karen Vergoth and senior producer Annette Heist. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our producer for digital media. Manya and Neil Rausch are at the controls today, and our intern is Molly Webster. Join us on June 8th. Next week, Science Friday, we're coming to you live from Fairbanks, Alaska. Yep, to talk about climate change and how it's reshaping Alaska. And for more information, you'd like to come and sit in the audience for our broadcast, contact the University of Alaska Fairbanks Summer Sessions office at 907-474-7021. That's the Summer Sessions office at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. You can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We're podcasting and blogging. You can leave us email there. And Science Friday's Kids Connection is up still there before the school year is out, making free teaching curricula that we use on Science Friday. Also, new videos are up there. Send us your videos. They're beginning to come in. We want to see what you have to offer. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.